Drew McIntyre here from WWE. Wielding the Claymore can be a life of chaos. When I'm not dominating in the ring, Chumba Casino is how this warrior takes a wee break. With hundreds of online social games and new weekly releases, there's always something fresh to try. And those daily boosts, next level. Even my free time feels like Valhalla. So when life feels like a battle, kick up your feet, have some fun, and let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
There you heard it right here, of course, last night on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Derek Mason, Braden Gall, live from Kitchen Notes at the Omni Nashville Hotel. Munson back in the Game Nashville studios, presented by Wholesaling, powered by RumbleOn.com, and did not end with 2 points, Derek, but it ended with 1 point. We have a huge weekend of football to get to, as the Texans could clinch the division, the Titans could keep their playoff hopes alive, the NFC East is on the line. We got a whole lot of stuff to talk about when it comes to football. We got drama in college basketball in the state. But the Preds last night fight their way back from down 4-1, which is a whole different discussion about being down 4-1 after an atrocious second period. They do fight their way back. They tie it up, and they make it count by collecting at least a point, sending it into overtime 4-4, and then just never really had possession of the puck in overtime. They took a penalty, which was probably a penalty, and you know, they couldn't, you know, once you go 4-on-3, there's just a lot of space on the ice, and Ottawa capitalized. You could sort of feel that one coming. But they did fight their way back to earn a point. We can debate whether or not it was a good thing that they had to do that or not. Probably wasn't. But they did collect a point, and they're in the business of collecting points right now.
Well, I mean, if that's the end goal, is to collect a point or two, then yes, they achieved half of the mission, which was to collect 1 out of 2 points.
What would Ethan Hunt say about that?
Exactly.
This is half of your mission, should you choose to accept it.
Exactly. So they are this team is just, yes, they you know, collected a point out of a possible two, but still there's problems here. And this is in the midst of all of this, and teams tend to do this across sports, period, team sports, that if you win, and in this case, the Predators, if you get a point, you come all the way back, sit in overtime and get a point, you feel good about yourself. So you kind of overlook, you know, some of the things that put you in that position to be down 3-1, to end up losing in overtime. You kind of look over those certain things, but they can't afford to look over these things. This inconsistent play is baffling. It truly is. It's baffling. They come out and they play one way, one game. And I know it is a long season, but hell, that's not an excuse. You're a professional. It's not like you are a rookie. This is a team full of rookies, and they're just getting used to the NHL, and it's a long season, and they're trying to figure it out, so it's up and down, up and down. You can give them some grace. But these guys understand. They know how to prepare their bodies. They understand how hockey is played, how this league is ran. There's no excuse for this team with this talent. This is like, I equate them, not from a discipline standpoint, but from a play standpoint with the talent, to the Cleveland Browns. They're doing exactly what the Cleveland Browns did, up and down play. Now, they're not undisciplined. They are a very disciplined team. But all of this talent across the board, and you can't tell me they can't play consistent hockey.
Well, and it's not even game to game. It's last night they, you know, 17
period
shots.
Period to period.
Yeah, 17 shots in the first period, 3 in the second period. Like 45 shots in, I'm exaggerating a bit, in the third period. But like, you know, it was the second period is what got them against Dallas on Saturday night at home. That they have just been inconsistent from period to period, from game to game, to week to week. Now, you know, you can start to look at the numbers since the losing streak. And, again, I know they threw the graphic up there on the TV screen last night about records since November 23rd, I think is the date, since the losing streak ended. And, you know, they've been, you know, 7-3-3. So, you know, over that 13-game span, they're playing decent hockey amongst the better records in the Western Conference. But, again, that's only if you cut it off at the 23rd. You can cut off a date and say, this chunk looks good, this chunk doesn't. And that's just that is sort of the nature of hockey. But I think you're nailing it. I think consistency is the issue for most people. and they see it. Listen, Ottawa's decent at home. They've won like 7 out of 8, you know, whatever. They're not a great hockey team, okay? Uh-huh. They're a young hockey team. They're not a great hockey team. And you just got boat raced in the second period. And you're down 4-1. And if you don't have to fight your way out of that 4-1 hole, that Roman Josi goal, maybe it's a game winner. Mm-hmm. And that Roman Josi goal is one of the most spectacular things you've ever seen anyone in a Predator uniform do. And he's continuing to make a case to be one of the best defensemen in the NHL and a Norris Trophy candidate. But you can't depend on a, you know, it was almost like hero basketball at some point last night where Josi just like, screw this, I got to take the puck and go.
Yeah.
And he did, and it was amazing. But you can't be putting yourself in situations where you're down 4-1 all the time. And they've been doing it too much. Even though, you know, again, even against the Rangers on Monday night where they win 5-2, well, two of those goals were empty netters. They gave up way too many high-danger chances. Like, you can go down the list of things where you go, well, this needs to be better, and that needs to be better, and this needs to be better. So we don't want to miss the forest through the trees. Collecting a point, and you now have 7 out of 8 points. You can get to 7 out of 8 on the road trip. You've got 5 out of 6 so far. So 5 out of 6 so far, not bad. But now that you're putting a little more pressure on the Boston game to collect some more points, and then you go Arizona, Pittsburgh, your next four games before the Winter Classic are amongst the three best teams in the NHL, and I don't care where Pittsburgh is in the standings. Uh-huh. That is a brutal game.
Well, I mean, if you look at – because, okay, you want to cut it off at the, you know, the 20 –
Cut me off 21st. At the losing streak, yeah.
You cut it off at the 21st. This is what it has been, and there's no dispute in this. Win-win-loss. Win, loss, loss. Win, win, loss, loss. Win, win, loss. So if I'm judging by past history, they're going to lose again before they get another win. This is just their – this. I'm only going by what the schedule and wins and losses tells me since their losing streak ended on the 23rd. They've been – and if anybody wanted to dispute it, fine. But facts don't lie. You are an inconsistent team.
Yeah,
and you can get mad at me if you want to. I'm frustrated because this is a good team. I could see if this was the Blackhawks or something that are still trying to fight their way up. They had to go through this whole, you know, purge of players. I can understand that, but this is one of the best teams, if not the best team in hockey in regards to talent. They got one guy that's hurt that can play for any team in the league, just about. So there's no excuse. I'm just going by the facts. You're not a consistent hockey team. Why? I don't know. You're not consistent from period to period. Yes, you can score with anybody. Yes, I don't worry when you're down 3-1, but you shouldn't be down 3-1.
Yeah, and I pissed off for greatness this morning, D-Mace. I love it. I think the record since that mark that you talked about is 7-3-3, and that looks good when you just glance at it because you do pick up points in a couple of those overtime losses.
Exactly.
But really, it's 7-6 if you think about it because – you know, again, Tampa Bay was an overtime loss where you played a really good game, you just didn't win. Mm-hmm. Vegas, really good game. You played a good game, you just didn't win. Yesterday, you fought back, you get to 4-4, you just didn't win. You can't have, in playoff hockey, you can't have, oh, well, we played really well and we just didn't win.
Because exactly.
You get eliminated. So I agree with you. And what it does is it puts pressure on these next four are absolutely brutal. At Boston, Arizona at home, and then a home-and-home after Christmas with Pittsburgh before we go to the Winter Classic. So these next four, there is some downtime in between. You get the Christmas holiday and a few days off there. But then you're going to be outdoors and the whole world's going to be watching you against a Dallas Stars team that came into your building last week and punked you. So you got a lot of work to do in these four games. And here's the real interesting angle to this whole thing is if you really try – listen, there's so much hockey left to go.
Exactly.
Right?
They
we know
– 40-some games.
We know there's so much hockey left to go. But at the same time, if you start doing math on getting to 90 points, 95 points, 100 points, and you start doing the math on that, you got to kind of win 2 out of 3 the rest of the way. And so you have to be consistently going 2-1 from here on out, sort of, to get yourself into that 100-point territory, 95-point territory, if you want to be considered, you know, second or third place in the division or whatever. So it was last night's game sort of epitomized the entire season. You play a really good first period. Craig Smith gets on the board. You play a garbage second period. Then you put all the pressure back on. You play a good third period. Then you lose in overtime. Mm-hmm. Good, bad. And really, in overtime, you never really even had the puck. You had like one scoring chance, and you know, it turned into a 3-on-1 the other direction, which actually drew the penalty. So it was what it was. The Predators' back on the ice again Saturday night at Boston, one of the best teams, if not the best team in the NHL. Pregame at 5, puck drop at 6. But we've got a huge weekend of NFL action. And obviously, we'll be focused on the Tennessee Titans today on the show. Also, James Wiseman, big news out of Memphis with James Wiseman's decision to quit college basketball. So we've got a lot of things to discuss today. We got Lee Sterling to make you some money a little bit later on. Crispy's going to join us. Teron Davenport next hour. Josh Ward. We'll recap National Signing Day for Jeremy Pruitt and the Vols coming up in a few minutes. But when we come back, I've got one question we have not really addressed about the Tennessee Titans and their chances for winning over the weekend. I want to ask you that, Derek Mason, when we come back. Off and running here on a Friday, live from Kitchen Notes at the Omni Nashville Hotel. This is Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 The Game and streaming on the Game Nashville app. Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Derek Mason, Braden Gall, Josh Ward from WNML joining us in just a minute. We'll get his thoughts on the Tennessee Volunteer signing class and maybe what's going on with the Memphis basketball team. We'll get to all of that coming up in just a few minutes. But the Tennessee Titans, of course, will be taking on the New Orleans Saints. Noon Central Time at Nissan Stadium, the final home game of the regular season. And we've talked a lot about the secondary, Derek. We've talked a lot about special teams, and those are two very huge issues with the Dorie Jackson being healthy and a new kicker starting for the Tennessee Titans with two games to go in the regular season. Totally normal. The other thing that we've talked a lot about Derrick Henry's health. Here's the question for me. The Saints are missing two first-round draft picks off their defensive line. Defensive end Marcus Davenport out for the year, season-ending surgery a couple of weeks ago, as well as Sheldon Rankins, their first-round draft pick, who also plays along the defensive line. So they're missing not only two starters, but two elite-level starters, two first-round picks that have developed into nice players. Now, they were very good in the last couple of weeks. How about this over the last 5 weeks? 36 yards rushing to Tampa Bay, 89-yard rushing to the Atlanta Falcons, along with like 9 sacks, 46 yards rushing last week to the Indianapolis Colts. They did not pressure the quarterback, however. Can the Titans' offensive line and the way they've developed, and a Derrick Henry, who even if he's not 100%, we know is going to give it 100%, God bless him, can they take advantage of those two injuries? Because I think that is one of the two biggest keys for the Titans' victory this weekend.
They're going to have to. You know, the Titans have been running the football very effectively, you know, this year. And whether they've played against one of the best run-stopping teams in the league or not, I don't think they've, with the exception of Buffalo, I got to really look at their schedule. I don't think they played against a dominant run front. You could say Jacksonville with Calais Campbell, but Jacksonville has so many problems. It's pathetic. And, you know, the first game, I think, was when they played Jacksonville. Just was, it was a weird game. But they will be – they can take advantage of the injuries that the New Orleans Saints have on the defensive line. Right now, I like to look at PFF, Pro Football Focus. Some people do, some people don't. It is what it is. And they give an overall grade of – each particular team headed into that following week. Right now, the grade for the New Orleans Saints on defense, they're eighth based upon what they do defensively, you know, all these metrics. So they're eighth, which tells me they are a good team. Yes, they are missing people, but they are a good team. And I know you look at the 40-some points that San Francisco put up.
And they did run the ball on New Orleans, 160-plus yards rushing.
But they, whatever they've been able to do, with the exception of that San Francisco game, it has worked. And my concern for the Tennessee Titans is the health of Derrick Henry. That's what it is, because you saw last week, you saw how much, even though Derrick Henry ended up, I believe, with 100 yards, he wasn't the Derrick Henry of 2 weeks prior to that game. And you just saw he didn't have that burst. He couldn't open up the way he wanted to. And more times than not, he was trying to look for the blow coming rather than opening up and delivering a blow. And a lot of that, if not all of that, had to do with his hamstring. So if the Titans want to run the football, if Derrick Henry's not healthy, you're going to end up seeing the same thing that you saw last week. Teams are good with Derrick Henry, you know, getting 4 yards here, 5 yards, 3 yards, 2 yards, 10 yards maybe, because they know he can't open up and explode.
Right.
So they're going to play. I think Houston played it a little bit different once they figured out Derrick Henry could not beat them. why he couldn't beat him, because he was injured. He couldn't hold up and go.
Is he more healthy this week with a week off and another week of rest and the hamstring getting the – and you can probably take people through this. I don't know if you've had hamstrings. I had a popped – I mean, back in my day when I was playing beer league softball, I had to leg one out to first base and popped my hammy there. Got to go ice cold, wrap that thing in the ace bandage and ice cold, get the massage going. I mean, if he was 80% last week, could he be 90% this week? Or is it more like he's just going to be the same as he was last week?
He could be, because hamstrings are tricky. I've never had a hamstring, and thank God I didn't. I don't know why, maybe because, you know, I did a lot of stretching. I did a lot of things and that would prevent me from having hamstring issues. Some guys just have chronic hamstring issues for whatever reason. But hamstrings are funny because hamstrings is one of those deals where you could be fine. You know, going into the game, you could be back to 100%. And then you try to open up and you strain it again.
Yep.
One play.
Yep.
Because the adrenaline is different in the game than it is in practice. In practice, you can kind of coast through. In the game, you can't. So, yes, he's rested, you know, and he's back to practice for a go and he looks good. But then they can give him the ball on the first play because he's already had hamstring issues and he can strain it again. And now he's back to being 75%, 80%.
I was strangely optimistic sort of diving deeper last night into the matchup. And you know Derrick Henry, if he's on the field, you have to pull him off, right?
Yeah.
Like we saw him talk his way back into the game against Oakland, even though we knew he wasn't 100%. You know, he got 20-plus carries, even though he wasn't 100% last week against in the game last week against the Texans. Mm-hmm. So we know he's not 100%, but he's going to be out there, and when he's out there, he's going to give you everything he's got, at least to the point where his body allows it. So missing Davenport and Rankins, I think, is a big deal for the Saints. They could not get pressure on the Colts, and I think it was one of those nights where Drew Brees on a prime time. You know, we see this with quarterbacks, right? Occasionally when – you know, Brett Favre did it when his dad died, or we see it with guys. You know, Brees had a chance to break the record and pass Tom Brady and Peyton Manning in historical fashion. He was on an absolute tear. What was he, 29 of 30 passing? Uh-huh. They just jumped on the Colts, and they never let up. But they did not get pressure on him. So I don't think that once you've jumped on a team, they can't run the football. So the key is not falling behind early and then staying with their game plan. And if you get down 14-0, it takes the Titans. You don't want Tannehill throwing the ball 36, 37 times, which is what he had to do last week. You want him in that 22 to 28 range, and then Derrick Henry, you can lean on him for four quarters, not just the first two and a half.
The Titans can't, and I repeat, can't. This is the one team, and maybe Kansas City, that they can't get down 14-0. You just can't. Because then you go and you have to abandon, you know, the way you play football. Why? Because you're going against a high octane offense and your defense is struggling. Your defense has injuries. Your defense is not fully healthy. And you're going against arguably one of the best two or three quarterbacks ever in the National Football League. And you're going against a receiver that is he's unguardable. And he catches everything that's thrown to him. So you can't afford to get down 14-0. And then they can't go into the game. I've seen OCs do this. I've been a part of it. OCs are head coaches. We got to score toe-to-toe. We got to go toe-to-toe with this team. So what do? You abandon what you're used to doing. You abandon the run game because you think you got to score every possession. So what do?
Yeah.
You start throwing the ball around the yard. Well, that's not your game, Tennessee Titans. You can't afford to throw the ball around the yard because you start doing that, the New Orleans Saints are going to beat you 35-7, 34-7 like they've been getting Indianapolis Colts. So they can't get down 14-0, and they got to find a way to stick with their game plan. They can't come in saying, we got to go toe-to-toe with the New Orleans Saints because they can't. They got to play their brand of football and hopefully slow the game down.
And what's fascinating, I found this little nugget yesterday as well, one of my favorite stats. So Drew Brees, I think, hit 22 consecutive to finish the game last week against the Colts. If his first four passes of the game are completed, he'll set the NFL record for completions in a row. Do you know who has the record for completions in a row?
Oh, man.
Outside of Nick Foles, who's also got it at 25 consecutive completions.
Good Lord. Is it Tannehill?
And Marcus Mariota.
Both of them?
Both of them are at 25. It's one of those stats that you forget.
Oh,
like,
my goodness.
That the Titans have two quarterbacks on their team that completed 25 consecutive passes. The NFL record.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow.
Along with Nick Foles.
That's how weird the NFL is.
Yeah, it's completely bizarre. So just something to keep an eye on. You know, if you're just a football fan, something to keep an eye on, of course, is the first four passes of the game. Should Drew Brees complete those four passes, he'll go to 26, and he'll break both Marcus and Ryan Tannehill's record. Also, Phillip Rivers at 20. Four guys sitting at 25.
I can see Phillip Rivers, but then the other two, I just didn't.
And Foles, too.
Yeah.
It would be fitting, though, for Drew Brees to have that particular record. Like, the guy who is one of the most efficient players in the history of the game at that position, mm-hmm. You know, it just would be fitting for him to have that record. So just keep an eye on that. Just something for football fans. No, you know, I could see them throwing four short passes to Michael Thomas and Alvin Kamara to get him the record, and then off we run. So you can't fall behind early. We've got a lot of keys to the game. The pass rush for the Tennessee Titans, the secondary with the injuries, are they healthy? The kicking game, Derrick Henry's health. The offensive line, can they take advantage of the Saints' weaknesses? We will break it all down all day long. We've also got huge news in the college basketball world for Memphis as James Wiseman has quit college basketball. What does it mean for the one and done? We will ask Josh Ward that question, as well as what he thinks about the Tennessee Volunteers recruiting class now that national signing period is all but over. We'll talk to Josh Ward from WNML when we come back right here on Morning Drive, live from the Omni Nashville Hotel. Kitchen notes, baby. Come down and get you some biscuits. Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. His name is Derek Mason. My name is Braden Gall. Josh Ward from WNML joining us here. And, Josh, we'll get to your thoughts on James Wiseman in Memphis in just a second. But the recruiting class is finished. Well, all but finished for the early signing portion of this. Now they've got another 6 or so weeks to sort of wrap it all up. I think Tennessee did an excellent job. They moved up 5 spots in the rankings, landed a couple of nice big defensive pieces. Sort of what are your thoughts on this class, how he closed on early signing period, and what's left on the board? I know that's a lot of questions. Josh, good morning, sir.
Yeah, sure, good morning. And there's a lot that goes into it, of course, with recruiting and signing day, and especially the split-up way that they do things now with the early signing period and then closing things out in February. The close for Tennessee on Wednesday was really good. The targets that Tennessee had on the board late, most of them ended up going to Tennessee. There were a few guys Tennessee still would have liked to have landed, but Tennessee was really happy to land some guys up front, being able to essentially hold on to Tyler Barron, a 4-star defensive lineman from Knoxville, hold on to a wide receiver, Jimmy Callaway, who had been committed to Tennessee for quite a while, and then flirted elsewhere, Kentucky, Florida, Georgia Tech were in there, and then beating out Florida and Florida State to kind of close out the day on Wednesday for Morvin Joseph, an outside linebacker defensive end, was really important. So I think the positives would be that Tennessee was able to hold through the 2019 season. I don't think there's any question that the Vols finishing on a strong note in the season helped them finish on a strong note in recruiting. If Tennessee goes 5-7 instead of 7-5, is Morvin Joseph choosing Tennessee over Florida State and Florida? I don't feel confident that he is, and we can probably say that about a few other guys. So I think Tennessee did a good job to hit needs at different positions on both sides of the football. They found versatility with guys that can move around and play different positions. I talked to Keyshawn Lawrence about that a couple of days ago, the defensive back from Innsworth, who could play corner, could play safety, could play nickel, and he said a lot of the guys in the class can do that, and they hit a bunch of in-state players. What's left, there is tight end Darnell Washington, the highest-rated player on Tennessee's board. I think George is the favorite there. He's planning to announce at the Under Armour game, and there's a chance he's signed. It's been difficult to read into his tweets, into what he's done, but George is the favorite. Tennessee's tried to pull off the upset there. Jay Hardy is a defensive lineman from Chattanooga, who does not appear to have signed, and if that's the case, Tennessee can take another shot in January, as he's a commitment to Auburn, but if he's not signed, Tennessee might still have a shot there. And then I think it's about hitting needs. Can you get a little more speed? Can you find another playmaker on either side of the ball in this class with 4 or 5 spots remaining? I think that's the focus to close things out.
Now, was there any surprise to you in regards to a guy they did get, guy that they were trying to get and didn't get? Did anything kind of come out of left field during this period for you, signing day period?
Well, on Wednesday, I think the closest to a surprise would be Jimmy Holiday, who was very much considering Tennessee. He was a TCU commit, and he visited Knoxville a couple of months ago, and he's a guy that will come in and play quarterback. Maybe that's a part of the surprise to the conversation, especially for fans who follow it, because I think a lot of people looked at Holiday and said, okay, he'll just play wide receiver, and he still might. But Tennessee's coaches talked about him as a quarterback and how different he is from Harrison Bailey, the highly touted quarterback out of Marietta who signed with Tennessee. Both will be on campus this spring, so both will be able to go through spring practice. And Holiday is a big-time athlete. Speed is the word you're going to hear first with him. And if he's not at quarterback, he can move over to wide receiver because they need playmaking there. So getting guys like Callaway, who I mentioned, and Jalen Hyatt to go along with Holiday can really help this class. So they I think, still want to find another guy or two with really good speed on the offensive side at wide receiver or in the defensive backfield. But I think Holiday would be the closest to that. And if Tennessee can get Darnell Washington, if that does happen, that would be as big of a pleasant surprise as Tennessee fans could hope for. And, again, I would take the conversation back to where we were talking about Tennessee in September and October and the conversation we're having now. It's very different on the recruiting trail for Tennessee. Yeah.
Joshua joining us here, WNML. We'll get to basketball in just a second, but one more for football, and that is nine players along the line of scrimmage. You got another three or four that are going to play at linebacker. One of them may switch to running back. We know positions aren't necessarily set, but 13 out of the 21 kids are set to play in either the front seven or along the offensive line in the trenches. Is this a good enough collection if he continues to do this year after year, the level top 15-ish class? Is it good enough for them to compete with Georgia and Florida and Alabama in the SEC?
It will give Tennessee a better chance to compete. If you're going to say take the three games together, does it give Tennessee a chance to go 2-1 or better on a consistent basis? I don't know that I can say that, but what I would say is that I think Tennessee did a good job of getting a number of guys up front. And last year, Tennessee was able to bring in four guys on the offensive line that I think they feel really good about. Two of those guys played a lot this year, and Wanya Morris and Darnell Wright. So I think it has to be about what you hope to continue to do. And by that I mean, okay, if you can go win consistently, if you can continue to beat the teams you just beat this year in the SEC East, and you can be more competitive, maybe pull off a win, can you beat Florida this year at home? I mean, how big would that be for just the perception of what Jeremy Pruitt is doing? Maybe you can win more recruiting battles, and you can go from being a top 10 to top 15 class to top 5 to top 10 to where you have more high-level players that Tennessee covets, because Tennessee did have other players on the board that Jeremy Pruitt wanted to go sign, and they missed out on those players. And they're still really happy with the class that they got, and I still think it's a really good class meeting those needs, as I mentioned. But they need to do more of it, and that's why I still think it's going to take time. If you're going to take the Georgia roster and compare it to the Tennessee roster, well, it's obvious which one comes out first. And I still think that's the case with Alabama very clearly, and I still think that's probably the answer with Florida, although Tennessee's gap with Florida in this class is not that wide. So Tennessee is making good progress. It still has plenty of work to do from a recruiting standpoint, and Jeremy Pruitt knows that.
Let's go from one rectangle surface to another. Basketball, they lose to Memphis. The two guards don't shoot well. They travel, well, they play Cincinnati, and the same thing occurs again. The two guards, I think they go 7-for-20, 1-for-6 from the three-point line. Is this becoming – are you alarmed by this, or do you just think these guys are kind of going through just a patch here where eventually they'll come out of it because the season's long? But or are you concerned that these two guys – because if they don't play well, the chances of UT winning is very slim.
Yeah, you're right there, and I think your question is becoming a more obvious one to lead the discussion with, and that's probably why it's a concern. I'll continue to say we're in mid-December, but we're getting closer to January. It means we're getting closer to SEC play, and other teams are trying to get things figured out. LSU lost ETSU, which is a quality team, the other night, but LSU's having a similar conversation of, okay, we can't have these kinds of losses. I think the concern for Rick Barnes the other night was that Tennessee came out of a disappointing performance against Memphis, knowing that its offense was having to try to get things turned around, and the defense didn't show up either. And if they have issues on that side of the ball, then there are going to be some games where they don't have a chance in SEC play probably to win. I would lean toward the side of Lamonte Turner and Jordan Bowden get things figured out. I think Jordan needs to understand he can be a really good player. He has to be the leading scorer for Tennessee on most nights. And then you hope the shot falls, and I would bet on that happening. With Turner, there's the question about his shoulder. How does that affect him? I don't know. And there's also, I think, to go along with the shooting performance and where things are with the offense, there's the concern of just how much is being asked of Turner at point guard. I mean, that's still kind of a new role for him, and he's not getting much help in terms of guys handling the basketball as well. I don't know if Josiah Jordan-James is going to play that big of a role there, although I think we're seeing him be more assertive within the offense. I think he can still be a playmaker for Tennessee off the ball. But everybody's going to come back to, okay, what can Turner and Bowden do to lead this offense? And if they don't shoot better, there are going to be games where they probably just don't. The defense has to be great, and then you hope you can pull things out at the end. And still, if Turner's taking a shot late in the game, I like the chances of it going in, but that's probably the conversation we're going to be having about Tennessee for the next few months.
Josh Ward, WNML, joining us here from Knoxville, talking all things Vols. And listen, we just saw Memphis in Thompson Bowling Arena. James Wiseman decides to quit college basketball. He played three games and then was suspended and fined $12,000 or $11,000. And now he's going to have all the money he wants in the world from whoever he wants it in the world because he's quit school. Number one, how surprised are you that it's taken almost this long for a high-profile player to do this? And number two, do you think this affects the rules of the NCAA moving forward, Josh?
Well, it kind of seemed like a matter of time for somebody in his position to make this decision. And it also probably seemed like this kind of case with the NCAA where he's being forced to sit out and give money to a charity because of the situation with Penny, to where that would probably be what pushes him out the door to say, you know what, I just don't need it. Selfishly, I'm disappointed because I would like to see James Wiseman in college basketball, and I hope this is some kind of wake-up to the NCAA that things have to change with rules. I'm a big proponent of the name, image, likeness, have been for years, and will continue to be. And maybe with those rules, he still would have ultimately decided, you know what, I don't want to play college basketball, but he was there, wasn't he? And now he's gone. And this is a year where you're also really lacking star power. I don't think there's a lot at the top. There's obviously no Zion that's drawing eyeballs. And I think that's going to continue to be a concern for the NCAA. The NCAA doesn't absolutely need James Wiseman, but the NCAA needs him more than he needs them. I think that's very obvious. So selfishly, I would have liked to have seen him come back and seen what he could do for Memphis. But I also would 10 times out of 10 say he needs to do what's best for him and what he wants to do the most, and it looks like he decided it's not worth it. I'm just going to go ahead and get ready to be a top three pick in the NBA draft, and I don't know how anybody can fault that decision. I think they should do what they want to, and I think more players are going to decide, you know what, I want to go do something else.
Yep, makes a lot of sense. Josh, thank you so much, man. Always a pleasure. Enjoy the weekend. I would ask you about how the Titans are doing in East Tennessee right now, but I think I already know.
Yeah, I think Titans fans are still being cautiously optimistic after the Steelers game this past Sunday. But kind of like the Vols, it's one day to the next, going to be different answers there. But big game this weekend over the next couple weeks. I have told Titans fans in Knoxville, don't give up yet. They still have a real shot here.
There you go. Over a 50% chance to make the playoffs still, which is crazy. That's why I don't do math. Josh, thank you so much, man. We appreciate it.
Hey, you got it. Thanks a lot, guys.
Absolutely. Josh Ward, WNML from Knoxville, of course. A lot of things going on there with the Vols losing back-to-back games, Memphis and Cincinnati, two critical games in the non-conference. Recruiting class feeling good. Football fans in Knoxville feeling good right now. But we do have to address this, and we've got to get back to the Titans. We'll do that. But this James Wiseman thing is a huge story in the world of college sports. I think Josh put it perfectly. Mm-hmm. College basketball needs James Wiseman a lot more than James Wiseman needs college basketball. We'll explain what happened, and we'll get your thoughts on it, Derek, when we come back right here on Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. You are listening to Morning Drive here live from the Wholesale Inc. studio powered by RumbleOn.com. That's where Marquise Munson is producing. We, Derek Mason, Braden Gall here at Kitchen Notes at the Omni Nashville Hotel, of course. So come on down, get yourself some biscuits. We'll find out what the biscuits are. Always my favorite part of the day when we're at Kitchen Notes is when we figure out what the – so you get your standard buttermilk, right? Uh-huh. They never change that one.
Nope.
Then they always have like a sweet one, and then they have a savory one. And you never know what it's going to be. It literally could be anything. So we'll find out in just a few minutes. I'm very excited about the biscuits.
Ah.
James Wiseman, Memphis, top two or three projected pick in the NBA draft. This is a guy who obviously moved from Ensworth out to Memphis to play for Penny's team in high school. Then he goes to Memphis. The whole scandal, of course, with the moving costs that Penny paid for to the family over a little over $11,000. He's been asked by he was suspended 12 games by the NCAA and asked to pay that money to a charity, which, of course, we assume that a college kid can't pay $11,000, or maybe a family member could, I guess. I don't know. I don't know his family's finances. It's none of my business, frankly. But you penalize the kid so hard and so much that you almost left him no option, because the second – so yesterday James Wiseman decides to unenroll. He leaves the Memphis, and he can go do whatever he wants now. And guess what he's worth? Hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Yeah.
He can sign a shoe contract. He can sign with an agent. He can go do endorsement deals if he wants to. The only 5 months of James Wiseman's career that make no sense right now are the 5 months since he enrolled in Memphis.
Yeah.
And he could not make a penny. And I'm with Josh on this. I'm a big fan of the name, image, and likeness. It was only a matter of time. You know, Brandon Jennings, I think, did this, right, when he went overseas, played overseas. We had Emmanuel Mudiay, who went to China, I believe, but that might have been some other – there were some off-the-court issues maybe there with him as well. He was a top pick, a top prospect. We have yet to see a guy just go, nope, I'm just quitting college, and I'm going to bounce a ball in a gym somewhere. And guess what? Today, he's not at Memphis. He can go make hundreds of thousands of dollars if somebody's willing to pay it for
him. Yeah, I don't know what – they expected this young man to do. Once the suspension was handed down, that's one thing. But then you ask this kid to, okay, pay the $11,000 back. Well, he got the $11,000 because his family at the time didn't have the $11,000. And who's to say they have $11,000 to give now? I don't know. So if that is indeed the case, then listen, y'all giving me no option. The only reason I think he went to Memphis is because of Penny Hardaway.
Sure.
I think that's the only reason he went to Memphis. Had it not been for Penny Hardaway, maybe he goes overseas to play. I don't know. But this kid's a hell of a talent. He's a nice kid. I've met him before. He's a nice kid. I mean, I just hate this rule, and it's not the NCAA's rule.
It's the NBA's rule.
It's the NBA's rule.
But the NCAA handed down the fine,
yeah,
though.
Yeah,
and that's
the NCAA
part
handed
out
a fine. I just hate this rule. It's either, you know, just don't have a rule. Let these kids, right, if they don't want to go, don't force them to go. This is the only – the NFL and the NBA are the only two sports – now, I understand why the NFL does it. I really do, because I don't think
there's
a kid
almost
is ready.
A physical protection,
yeah,
element.
Exactly. I don't think a kid is ready coming, yeah, out of high school. But any other sport, just about, you can go straight to the pros if you're good enough. Baseball, you get drafted out of high school, and you can go straight to the pros if you're good enough. But basketball and football, I believe, I don't know how hockey does it, but I believe they're the only sports that don't allow you to. In football, I understand and keep it that way. But basketball, I don't understand.
Aren't teenagers winning tennis championships? And
exactly.
Stuff? Like golf. So, like Jordan Spieth and Tiger Woods were both winning golf at like 20 years old and 19 years old or whatever.
Yeah, but I understand why. I truly understand why the NCAA and the NBA did what they did, because
general managers couldn't protect themselves.
Yeah, well, that and then
Michael Olowokandi.
The NBA, the NCAA had sort of a hand in this too, because they talked with the NBA, and they came out with a happy medium, because I'm pretty sure the NCAA wanted these kids to stay at least 2 or 3 years. And the NBA said, no, these kids, if they're good enough, they should be able to come out.
Yeah.
Well, the compromise is a year for everybody, but is an NBA rule.
But it doesn't turn into a compromise. Like you said, it
exactly
ends up just being – like if you read about all these guys, Marvin Bagley or,
yeah,
whatever, like they're all getting paid in the AAU circuit.
Exactly.
All, middle school, high school – you know, people are getting paid because shoe companies own AAU teams. So they're like, hey, here's 50 grand for travel expenses and, you know, whatever. And so they're getting paid all up until the moment they enroll in school. And then they're getting paid the second they leave school. The only time they're not making money on their ability is the time that they're in school. I have no problem with the baseball rule, which, of course, is if you're going to go to college, you got to stay 3 years.
Exactly.
But if you're not going to go to college, do whatever the hell you want.
Yeah.
And James Wiseman's good enough to say, listen, I owe a charity $11,000 because the NCAA is making me pay that. Mm-hmm. The second I unenroll in Memphis, I'm going to have more than that sitting in my bank account
that
because I can sign.
That should have been Penny Hardaway's payment.
Right. Yeah.
He should have had to pay that.
Yeah, I agree.
But if they don't change this rule, which I think the NBA will, the next collective bargaining, if they don't change this rule, you're going to start to see slowly what the you know, LeVar Ball did with his son, LaMelo, I believe.
Go to Australia,
go to another country. And now LaMelo, because here's the reason. He's getting more experience playing over there than he is over here. Why? Because he's playing against grown men. He's playing against guys that have been, you know, in their professional league 10, 15 years, guys that are skilled guys.
See, this is an interesting question. Do you think if you're let's say you go to a high level ACC team,
uh-huh.
best league in basketball,
uh-huh.
ACC, Big Ten's good, SEC's good, but the ACC's the best, like the way the SEC is in football.
Uh-huh.
If you were to go to Louisville or you know a high level college basketball program where every night you're going against Jim Boeheim, Mike Bray, Coach Krzyzewski, and pretty well coached basketball teams, even though they're young college athletes. Do you think it's a higher level of competition in like an Australian professional league versus like the ACC? Where do you think a player actually develops his game better?
I'm honestly asking. Yeah, from a maturity standpoint, I think going overseas because you are now living. It's not just about basketball. It's not just about the on court stuff. It's the off court stuff. You got to now live like a professional. No one's there to coddle you. No one's there to tell you, call you and say, hey, listen, you need to get up and go to class and you need to go to study table. You are now an adult.
Yeah.
You have to do adult things. Now, you probably have your dad or your parents there just because you're overseas and you don't want to be by – they don't want you to be by yourself. But for the most part, you are a professional, and you're playing against grown men that have families.
Yeah.
So to me, I think, you know, the only deterrent is being overseas, being away from the States. Can you endure, you know, 6 months, 7 months of being overseas? Some guys can't. Some guys can't.
Yeah.
But I think you're going to start to slowly see, you know, because it's working out for LaMelo, he's projected a top 10 pick, a top 5 pick. So it's working out for him. It's worked out for other guys.
Yeah.
So I think if they don't change this rule, the NBA doesn't change this rule, I do believe because the talent is getting better overseas, these guys are going to start to go play for the best teams.
Yeah.
Overseas or some of the better teams overseas.
It's a glaring shot across the bow.
Because then they get to make money.
Yeah, it's a glaring shot across the bow to the NCAA and the NBA on this rule. And if you want to see all the best players mm-hmm. in college, in high school recruiting and basketball, I mean, we're talking Zion Williamson level players. That's where James Wiseman sort of falls.
Yeah.
Now, maybe not Zion.
He doesn't have the hype
of
Zion and all of that.
Yeah, he doesn't have 4 million Instagram followers or whatever because, again, if it doesn't happen on the gram, it didn't happen.
Yeah,
but,
it didn't happen.
But if – you know, if the NBA and college basketball both want these people, like this group of kids, to just go languish in obscurity for a year, mm-hmm. what's the point?
Yeah.
Like, what's the point of that? Like, if my son or daughter could make money off their skill set at age 18 or 22 or 35, like, what does it matter? So I think this is the first – we knew this was going to happen. I think the NCAA set this up.
Mm-hmm.
Not on purpose, but I think but the situation with the suspension and the fine, it almost forced his hand. Why come back and play 20 games, 18 games in the AAC, risk an injury when
not
I can
make any money?
When I can go practice my game for 5 months? We're talking 5 months out of your life here.
Yeah,
like 5 months is
and then
no
you,
time.
You get to tailor your schedule to what you want it to be. Knowing this kid, I'm pretty sure he's going to be in the gym room and in the field room all day.
Weight room.
Going to be his job.
Nutritionist.
Exactly. That's going to be his job. He doesn't have to worry about anything else.
Working on building your brand, sign with a shoe company, sign with an agent.
So kudos to him. I mean, and I know people are going to point their finger at the NCAA. Well, point your finger at the NBA because
it's the NBA's
it's
rule.
Not the NCAA's rule, even though I think the NCAA did sort of, you know, they had a say, sort of, and they benefited with this rule. Yeah.
They've benefited because all those athletes have gone through the college ranks, which is good for college basketball.
Yeah.
Let's not fool ourselves. I love the fact that they got to play in college basketball for a year. And Anthony Davis, Kentucky fans, sure as hell love the fact that Anthony Davis and Michael Kidd-Gilchrist came through Kentucky. It doesn't mean that they should have.
Okay, but how hard before we go to break, how hard then once the rule changes, because the rule is going to change and these kids are going to be able to go straight out of college, meaning straight out of high school to college, how hard do you recruit these kids then?
You got to be careful.
The five-star kid that does have the ability to go to the NBA, he's still wavering. How do you recruit these kids?
I would call Tim Corbin, the Vanderbilt baseball coach, and I would say, dude, how do you recruit one of the best recruiting classes in America every year, a bunch of kids that are going to get drafted in the NBA, in the Major League Baseball draft, and convince them all to go to college?
Yeah.
And that is what Tim Corbin does. He has guys that go – that if he doesn't have them signed and committed or whatever going to Vandy, they'd be like top 15, top 20 first-round draft picks. Mm-hmm. Some of them still are. And some of them still go pro, but he gets guys that would be first-round picks to say, nah, I'm going to play baseball and hone my craft. Oh, by the way, get an education at Vanderbilt. and ride around Nashville for 3 years like a superstar, right? Like they're kings of the campus over there on Vanderbilt. So there's it's sellable. You just got to make the right sales pitch, and so we'll see
what
happens.
A lot of resources you put into a kid, and then he decides,
I'm out. Hey, that's the life of. And baseball coaches don't even have full scholarships for their full roster.
Exactly.
So at least in baseball, you have options, though, because if you don't like your draft position, then you can just go to college and just hone your game. So at least you have the option. Basketball, you don't have that option. You have to go to college, and
that's a whole. Well, you don't have to. You can, like we said, you can go overseas. You can go sit in the gym. You can go sign with a shoe company. You can go do whatever you want. But it is a good point, though, that players get drafted and then get to decide whether they're going pro or not. And that's different than any other sport. Can you imagine?
You're right.
Can you imagine like the Titans taking a draft pick in the second round, a high second round pick? They're okay. We're taking Johnny Smith out of. You know, Cartersville, Georgia, defensive end, 6'5", 220, but he needs to get in the weight room. And then he gets drafted in the second round. He's like, nah, I'm going to Georgia.
Exactly.
You know, can you imagine if that was the rule? And that's what baseball has to deal with on both the major and college level. It's really, really crazy. Speaking of the Tennessee Titans, they are hosting, of course, the New Orleans Saints with a chance to keep their playoff hopes alive. Can they get to 10-6? Can they get back on the winning streak? There are two major questions that they will have to answer. We will get to those questions when we return right here on Morning Drive. ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. You know what's slower than a pace car? Waiting at the car wash. That's when I fire up Chumba Casino. It turns those slow minutes into fast fun. With new games every week, you'll never get bored. Next time you're stuck in the slow lane, speed up with Chumba. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.